This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer On Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Lawyer On Air podcast. In this episode, I share with you another diverse story of a woman lawyer working in Japan. I'm Catherine, the host of the show, and I'm a lawyer based in Tokyo for more than 20 years, and I love helping unlock the wisdom of the stories that women lawyers never tell. What I've learned from my career in law so far is follow your instincts. Don't let others decide your success. Lots of people around you will show their concerns based on their standard of happiness and their standard of success, but you should make up your own standard of happiness and success. Well, those are the words of my guest today, Mari Hiraizumi. Mari is the General Counsel, Head of Legal and Executive Director, or Torishimariyaku, for GSK, a UK-based global pharmaceutical company in Japan. Mari began her professional career in 1999 as an associate attorney at Osaka International Law Offices, a small boutique in Osaka. At that firm, she supported inbound and outbound international business transactions and disputes, and that started her on a career that has led her to being a brilliant in-house legal counsel. Mari holds an LLB from Kyoto University and an LLM from New York University, and she's licensed to practice in Japan and also in New York. You can check out Mari's full bio in the show notes. On this episode, Mari shares one great story about her success in taking on the role of an external board member, a Shagai Torishimariyaku, of a Japanese manufacturing corporation. And in doing so, she has set her sights on being a role model for Japanese in-house legal counsel to contribute to multiple companies concurrently. Why? Well, because there are so many benefits for both companies and also for the in-house lawyer themselves. Perhaps you might be thinking, isn't there some potential unconscious bias that might assume that an in-house counsel for one company could not work for another company concurrently? But we bust that myth today on this episode. If you are an in-house legal counsel who is Japanese and you are gunning for a board role at another company and wondering how to do that, then this is the episode for you. Mari also shares about how being on the leadership team as a director is a game changer in the way that she leads her legal team and also impacts teams globally. And Mari also shares her tips for young lawyers, her favorite saying, and she gives the answer to a ChatGPT generated question that gives us a truly brilliant answer to the law that she would like to see enacted in this modern world if she had a magic wand. Let's get into it. Hello, Mari, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kathleen. This is a great opportunity. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. And if we're meeting up in person, where would we go to, Mari? Do you have a favorite wine bar or restaurant that you love to go to? And what would you choose as your beverage from the menu?
Yeah, actually, my choice would be a bistro called Momotenashiya, which is in Shinbashi area. This is a special place for me because this is a part of the Antenna Shop. Do you know Antenna Shop? It's a satellite shop.
Yes.
Yeah, which is jointly organized by Okayama Prefecture and Tottori Prefecture, the Western Japan. I like this place because I was born and raised in the Okayama Prefecture. So going there, I feel at home all the time. So this place is an oasis in Tokyo for me. So they provide lots of, good dishes using local agricultural products, and they offer nice craft beer.
Oh, so that would you be what you choose, the craft beer?
I like the Okayama's makers craft beer, and then they also provide wines based on the peaches. No,
Ah.
sorry, the grapes.
A peach, a grape. So they also provide
Of course.
wine made from grapes, of course. So, like,
Yeah,
is that
of course.
the what's the grape called? The special grape?
Muscat of Alexandria, I think.
Muscat, that's it, the Muscat grape. I know, right? There's some winery in Okayama, I think. Furao or Fuda, something beginning with that. But anyway, maybe I've got that wrong.
Really?
So yeah, there's a
Okay.
yeah. I'll pop it in the show notes later. But there is also a winery in Okayama, I think, closer to Kurashiki, that has red wine and white wine made from Muscat grapes.
Yeah, this must be great. I didn't know that though. Yeah.
There you go. So another one to add to your itinerary when you go back to Okayama. Great. I
Exactly.
was just there recently. I went to Kurashiki in particular for a sister city celebration, 50 years of sister city celebration between Kurashiki and my hometown of Christchurch.
Oh, really? It's
Yeah.
a sister town of Christchurch.
Yes, 1973 to 2003, 23. Whoops, there we go.
Oh, I didn't know
Yeah.
that. Good to
Yeah,
know.
good
Thank
to know,
you.
right? Yeah,
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
yeah, well, there we go. So, when you were a child, I'm expecting that was in Okayama. Did you have some sort of dreams or things you were thinking about in the future about what you'd like to do?
In my childhood, I didn't have any particular dream because of my parents. My mother often told me that you should be a housewife of a man who has a stable job. Typically, the civil servants at the Okayama City Hall or Okayama Governor's Office or something, and raise kids there and be there and die there in Okayama. So my parents, especially my mother, expect me to be a housewife, and then she doesn't expect me to have a career myself. So that was basically my childhood. And well, for her, she is from a farmer's family, and in our neighborhood, it was quite typical that the happiness for woman is to become a housewife of a good husband who has a stable job.
And there's nothing wrong with that either.
Of course, it's nothing wrong, but
Yeah.
it's not just for me. So I feel that this is not for me. I don't
Right.
know why.
Did you tell your mum that at the time, or is it just something that in your head you're, okay, I hear what my mum's saying, but I've got a different idea. Did you tell her, or did you just let it happen in your own way?
That's a good question. Perhaps I didn't tell my mother. But I was a kind of frustrated in my childhood, really struggling to understand what my real dreams are. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. So, I mean, I think we can sometimes have a real concrete dream, but other times not. And there's no way that's correct over another, right? So sometimes it just takes longer, or it takes a different way, or it's just our environment. There's other things that happen, and it's never something that's concrete for everyone. I like to ask this question because some people have got a definite, I want to be a lawyer because my mum was a lawyer or my dad was a lawyer. Others are, no, it just came to me later on. So that's interesting. What did your dad do? Can I ask you that?
He's a employee at a company in
Right.
Okayama.
He had the job that your mum said was the job to have if you're going to marry a guy, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So he's also from farmer's family, and she is also from farmer's family, actually peach farmer's family.
Ooh.
And they believe that farming is it's difficult, it's hard work, and money is not good. So marrying to a husband with a stable job is the best thing, you know, for a woman to have as a life.
Right. Well, they must be very surprised and delighted, I would say, to see what you've done from those days, and we'll get into that as well. But you talked about that harder childhood. So then when did studying law come up for you? Tell us a bit more.
Yes, it was in my sixth grade civic class, actually. I first learned about the concept of judicial system in Japan, the court system. And it struck me because, you know, I often had lots of disagreements and arguments with my, you know, parents, my siblings on various topics. And I was genuinely thinking, you know, how people can resolve disputes or the conflicts while they are, you know, so different. And then by knowing that there is a system which can resolve, you know, dispute, it just opened my mind, and this is a great system. I suddenly became interested, and I felt that I should be a part of this system.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. So, how old is sixth grade?
12 years old,
12
yeah.
years old. Okay, so 12 years old, you're getting this download about the judiciary, the court system in Japan, and it's coming almost from a, you know, your own background where you've had debates within your own family. So then that has to, there's a step, isn't there, from thinking about that to actually wanting to do law and become a lawyer. You did actually go and do your LLB in Kyoto University, but what led you there from that jump from 12 to going to university? Tell us a bit more about that part of your history.
My parents first recommended that I shouldn't go to university because they want me to be a housewife. So university education is not necessary to become a housewife. My family was not such a rich family. Because of this kind of conservative culture I was in, I felt like I need to get out of this town. And then I need to get out of this conservative culture. Going to university outside of Okayama is a kind of good excuse for me to go to somewhere completely different from where I was born and raised. And then because I was really interested in the judicial system and the subject of law, so I decided to go to university to study law somewhere outside of Okayama.
Whoa,
So,
okay.
Kyoto is a good place because it's not too far away from Okayama. Tokyo was a bit too far and then too expensive, but the Kyoto, this is a good place to persuade my parents that I go there and then live alone.
Ooh, you had to persuade your parents.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be a big story in itself. Any tips, though, for anyone who's trying to persuade their parents to, you know, do something like that, do something that they've said absolutely 100% not to do, and you've gone and said you want to do it. Is there something that worked to convince them?
I don't know. The one challenge is, financial burden. So I just went ahead and applied for the scholarship, which, our high school introduced to me. And this scholarship is really helping me a lot financially. And other than that, I just kept sharing my desire, my dream, my aspiration to my parents. And then eventually they let me go to Kyoto.
Great. Probably after you got accepted, they might have to, right, relinquish and say, okay, you can go. Wow, that's really interesting. And I think that's sort of been a theme across your life, and we get into that a little bit more, but being prepared, you know, financially, but also going ahead with your desire is quite an important thing if you want to achieve something. So well done that you did that. And you didn't only stop at Kyoto University, you then went on to New York as well, right?
Yes.
But how did that happen? Why was there a New York part? That must have completely surprised your parents as well.
Before going to New York, I got qualified as a lawyer and then I started working for a small law firm in Osaka. And there I assisted a lot of, Japanese companies doing business with the foreign counterparts.
Right, so you had some experience with the overseas people and must have been very interesting. What do you remember from those early days at the boutique firm at in Osaka?
I could gain a lot of experience, good experiences. But what I felt there was that the Japanese companies doing business with foreign counterparts were suffering disadvantages due to lack of knowledge and capabilities of foreign law or the foreign legal processes, in particular US law and US legal processes. So I think it's important for me to learn US law and US legal processes to better assist my clients.
Right, I see. So, was there an opportunity to go to New York Law School then? Did it come up through the company, the firm that you were with, or in some other way?
The boss of my small firm assisted me to go there, you know, financially, and then he encouraged me to go there because he also agreed that my study abroad would help, you know, my work at the firm.
I see. Wow, how interesting to have also got the financial support from them. How did you battle that with your parents?
Well, at the time I was already grown up, and then by that time I was married, and I was living in Osaka away from my parents, so
Right.
I think they just gave up.
How was it then? You went to law school in the United States. How amazing. It's quite different to Japan, different to Kyoto, different to Osaka, different to Okayama. How was it? Tell us about your experience there. What was it that you remember first about how different it was or how interesting it was compared to, say, Japan?
It's definitely diversity of people, diversity of faculty, and diversity of classmates. So there are so many classmates from, you know, all over the world.
I see. So, how many years did you study there?
1 year.
Yeah, and is there a certain program that you take there? It's an LLM, isn't it?
It is LLM.
Did you have to focus on a certain area of law?
Not really. At NYU, I was able to pick up the subject I'm interested into. So I just pick up subjects which I really intellectually interested in.
What sort of subjects were they?
One of them was international trade law, which I really liked, interesting. And another is the antitrust law. And I also took, you know, US corporations law. Because it should be useful for my work.
Right. And what's a great memory from those days, sitting in those classes and meeting that diverse range of students and people who were teaching the classes? What do you remember from that as a great memory?
Oh, I made a lot of friends from all over the world, and yeah, I keep connected with many of them till now. It's about 20 years ago, so it was so such a fun. I had a good time with lots of friends from all over the world.
That's great because sometimes we make friends during a certain period, but we don't keep in touch. So when you keep in touch like that, it really builds your network. That's really good. And then after you did your first the year at New York University Law School, you started working for a US firm. Tell us about that.
Yes, the firm in Ohio was looking for a Japanese attorney who could assist them to help Japanese clients over there because Ohio is a center of Japanese automotive industry, and Honda, you know, Japanese car maker Honda's headquarters is in Ohio. So they have lots of clients, Honda itself, tier one supplier, tier two suppliers. So they need someone who as a translator or as a salesperson to support their, you know, Japanese practice, so to speak.
Right, because you sort of bridge between the English language and Japanese language. And how was
Exactly.
that then? You know, you're working as a lawyer, you've done that in Osaka before, but working as an attorney in the US must have been quite different again. So, can you remember any challenges that you had at that time that you overcame, or perhaps even again, something that was a really great memory from those days working in Ohio?
Yeah, Ohio is totally different place from New York. That's my first impression. It's a little bit like Okayama, a countryside, and then people are a little bit more conservative than in the big cities. It was really interesting to see the culture is different from city to city in the US. So I assisted lots of Japanese clients of the firm. And I became friends with many of them, like president of the US operation of a small supplier or to Honda. So I really understood how these expatriates from Japan in Ohio thinking, so what they are thinking about and how they are feeling about their life, their position, their business. So it was really interesting to see the different type of life as expatriates from a Japanese corporation.
Yeah, it would have been really good insights that's probably still help you now to think back to like your clients that you are with, your internal clients in the company and external, and the different points of view that people would have as well.
Yes,
Yeah.
they are there like with the only small number of people, unlike their headquarters in Japan. So they feel alone. And if there are any issues, not only legal issues, but also other issues, they feel helpless. So they are really eager to be supported by a trusted people. So I feel rewarded when I was able to help these, Japanese clients.
Yeah, even beyond the law, you become kind of confidant or a place where they can feel safe when they're talking with you as well. Because it's hard work living and studying in another country. So I'm sure you were that for them. But
Yeah.
that series of time in America finished and you came back to Japan. What happened when you came back?
I went back to my Osaka law firm, but shortly after that, I decided to go to my another journey to become a public official at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
All right, that's quite a different thing to being a lawyer. What triggered you to do that kind of work? Did you just want to expand and do another area of the law? Was there something there that allowed you to say yes to that kind of work?
Well, it was just a coincidence, I have to say. So one day I went to the Osaka Bar Association to get flyers from different organizations. And one flyer is a job offering from the MOFA, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to say that they are looking for someone, the lawyer who can speak English and then who can help their trade negotiation with the foreign countries. So at the time, our government was really facilitating the free trade agreements with foreign countries. So they need help from outside of MOFA.
Oh, so you ended up supporting free trade agreements with other countries outside of Japan.
Indeed, exactly. So when I saw the flyer, I just paused and then I was like struck at the time.
Something felt
And
right. Yeah.
because
Yeah.
I, as I said, I studied international trade law, which was very much interesting subject at NYU. But at the time, I felt it was interesting, but probably I would not be able to use this knowledge at my work, because my firm in Osaka doesn't have this type of job, big job to have, trade negotiation. And then suddenly the job offering just came to my attention, and I was like, gee, this is meant for me. So, yeah, that was the moment.
Wow, that's amazing. And it ties into the stuff that you were doing, the study that you were doing in the US. And you imagined also that this Osaka firm may be not the place where you could expand on that. And you really wanted to do it. So you did that. How long was that role for?
Oh, that was a fixed-term contract. So that was 1 year with extension if both parties agrees. So I talked to my boss at the Osaka law firm and asked him to let me go for another year to Tokyo this time, even though it was only a few months after I came back from the US.
Wow, and your boss said yes.
I felt so sorry because obviously my boss, he was expecting that, I should work hard after coming back from the US. So I felt so sorry, but I just,
You went ahead.
yeah, I just shared with him my honest feelings, and then he kindly agreed to let me go. So I'm really, really grateful for his kindness.
And I think sometimes they realize that that's what's going to happen anyway, so may as well let you go. And then, later on, there's ways of means of you coming back and somehow helping or keeping in touch in different ways. It's very hard to keep an employee when they really want to do something else. He must have seen that from you. And I think you were saying that this experience that you had at MOFAT, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it sparked your interest to then do another journey as an in-house lawyer rather than a law firm. What happened? What happened to bring up the in-house feeling?
So at MOFA, I really enjoyed working in a team. So I worked together with people within MOFA and people from different ministries like METI or the Ministry of Agriculture to just represent different interests from different industries. So for me, it is really exciting to be in the center of the negotiation, not like an outside supporter, but working in the center of the business is probably something I really want to pursue.
So that's what you're saying then is like a legal department or being an in-house lawyer is also the center of the organization. Interesting. So working in the team, being at the center of negotiations, not an outside supporter, which maybe you're saying a law firm lawyer could be the supporter on the outside. Where does the connection come though from being a team member in a government organization? To in-house, where's the jump? How did you make that connection?
So when I was working at MOFA in Tokyo, so I met many in-house lawyers working for private corporations. And I realized that, working in in-house, not only at the ministry, but also the corporations must be such a fun. So, and then this is a time when I first realized about the organization called Japan In-House Lawyers Organization, of which I became the board member after that. So in Tokyo, I was so lucky to have a great opportunities to meet such a wonderful people who are active in the, In-House Lawyers Association. So that was really eye-opener for me.
Yeah, interesting. And you did at JILA, Japan In-House Lawyers Association, become a board member. So that means you must have been an in-house counsel. And I know that you did take on an in-house counsel role after that. Tell us about the journey then from, being in the ministry to actually securing your first in-house role.
After MOFA's 1 year term was over, I once again went back to my Osaka law firm and then I restarted working for a law firm. But I still think about, perhaps I should change to in-house someday. And then one day, the headhunter retained by Bayer approached me. And then I just became interested, and I went to have a coffee with him at the Hilton Osaka Hotel Lounge.
You remember that very well. Obviously, it's very significant. And what happened?
Listening to the story, it was really interesting because the mission he mentioned was to revitalize the legal department. Bayer's legal department is now very much sophisticated, mature organization led by, my friend Kiko Kikuchi-san. She appeared on the most recent episode. I listened to that. But at the time in 2006, the law department only consists of a few people and no Japanese lawyer. So, they were still in the middle of building, so to speak, the legal department. So at the time, the buyer was looking for someone who can support the strengthening the legal department. So that mission sounds to me very exciting and rewarding.
Yeah, it really sets up a challenge for you to do some kind of, I think you mentioned to me earlier, is the significant contribution to the company to set up the legal and compliance function.
Yeah, I think so. So at the beginning, the number of the legal department was just a few people, and I help, recruiting lots of the talented people, including Japanese Bengoshis. And when I left Bayer in 2013, the team has grown to like over 10 people team.
Oh, I see. Right. So you left in 2013 and you took up another in-house legal role.
Yes, at another pharmaceutical company called Boehringer Ingelheim. It's a German company.
And what did you do there?
My position there was the head of legal and compliance.
Did they have a compliance and legal function before you joined?
Yes, they have a good size of legal and compliance function. So I just took over my predecessor's role.
Ah, and what happened there that's significant for you that you remember?
This was the first time for me to lead the whole department. So at Bayer, I was reporting to the Japan General Counsel, but Boehringer Ingelheim was the first company to offer me the position of the head of legal and compliance. So I became a department head there. So that was a great experience for me.
So you're really at the center of the organization now that you talked about earlier. What do you
Yeah, I
remember?
think
What do
so.
you remember being quite hard or being very exciting at that time?
So the biggest challenge for me is to manage the older male colleagues than me.
Oh, older male colleagues.
So I was in my 40s, early 40s, and then I have a few colleagues who are older than me, like close to 60 years old or someone in mid-50s. So culturally, this was my first experience to manage someone older. And I kind of sense that these people may not be so happy by managed by younger female colleague.
What did you do to overcome that? And I think it's something that happens a lot in Japan because a lot of Japan is based on hierarchical through your age, right? For someone young to come in would be quite a surprise for them. So how did you manage that? Anything you remembered that really worked well? Because I think managing people is all about emotions. It's all about making sure people feel safe and comfortable. So I'm wondering what you did that was really useful for you that made it quite well successful, or at least manageable for looking after people who are older than you.
Well, trial and errors.
Right.
So I tried to be myself and transparency and honesty. So these are a sort of the elements I try to bring in. So I try to share my view in my own words and respect.
Yeah, that's so key. And what happened then? Did you stay there for quite a while or did you move on again?
I spent 6 years at Boehringer Ingelheim. By the way, I spent 6 years at Bayer as well. So maybe 6 year is my Olympic cycle. I don't know.
That's funny. So after there you came to the place where you are now.
Yes, so in 2019, I left Boehringer Ingelheim and then joined GSK, my current employer.
Right. And I think at GSK, it's just been the making of you because I've watched you through your career from afar, seeing where you've gone, and noticed when you arrived at GSK, things just started to change because you took on a really significant role there. Tell us about that.
So, as a head of legal, I don't foresee compliance now, although I closely, work with compliance. So, I just manage all the legal risks, which our company has to be careful about, and supporting my general manager and my leadership team. So I'm a part of the leadership team members, and I'm also part of the Torishimariyakkai, the board of directors. So it's good that the GSK offered me not only the head of legal position, but also the Torishimariyaku position, the board director position.
Absolutely.
Which gives me, lots of experience.
So you're now a director on the board, you're a Torishimariyaku. What is different about being that level as well as being the legal officer, right? So you're doing both roles. Does it change your view or the way that you do your work when you can see from up high the way the board looks at things?
Yes. In one word, I learned enterprise mindset.
What is that?
So enterprise mindset, in my mind, is that you should not only focus on your own territory or your own area of expertise, but you should see the big picture. You should see the full picture of the company. You should be indirectly responsible for, you know, all the parts of the company. So not only the legal issues, but also for other issues like HR issues, business issues, quality issues, everything I have to be aware of, and I have to be fix it if something is wrong. So anyway, you have to see, you know, what's best for the enterprise overall, not just a piece of it.
Wow, that's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's obviously the board role, is to look at everything. And does that then impact the way that you do your legal work as well? Because you know the enterprise mindset, you bring that into the legal function as well.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Wow, so it's quite different. I wonder what your day looks like, your actual daily work, for example, is, are you mixing board meetings as well as your law work?
It's different day by day. So on some days I attend, you know, leadership team meeting and the board meetings, and other days I work, you know, more closely with my legal department colleagues to work on contracts or work on disputes. So it's totally different day by day, but I have a good combination of leadership team work and daily legal work supervision. Yeah, I'm also a leadership team member of GSK's global pharma legal organization. This is another sort of enterprise mindset outside of Japan. So I sometimes work with my supervisor or work with my peers outside of my country to challenge or improve the same pain points overall, you know, GSK worldwide.
One of the things that you've been able to do at GSK is not only have your GSK role, but take on another role as an external board member in another Japanese corporation.
Yes.
And I don't think this is so common, Mari. Perhaps it's getting more common, but I think in an earlier discussion, you said to me that you wanted to be a role model for Japanese in-house legal counsel to do this kind of concurrent role. So why do you think that? Why is it beneficial to you personally, and why is it beneficial for the company that you are doing this other role outside of the company?
In my opinion, in-house lawyers are great candidates for external board roles. Why? Because we know, you know, Gemba, the real place where business is happening and how business operates day by day. And we are involved in tough decision making every day. So in-house lawyers must be more capable to detect and analyze and handle real life risks compared to lawyers at the law firms. So I think it would be really great that the in-house lawyers can share his or her capabilities with more companies.
I love that, right? You're bringing in what you can learn from the other company back to your company, and the difficulties that you might challenge yourself with in your current company to the other company. So it's very beneficial.
Yes, I truly believe so.
Ah, and I also wonder how you managed to get the buy-in, how you managed to get that approval. It almost makes me feel like I'm going back to you and your mum and dad, how you got to persuade your current company to say, hey, I want to do this director role at this other company. How did you persuade or encourage them to understand it would be good for them and good for you?
Yeah, it was a bit of a challenge because there were no such precedents to my knowledge. So I prepared the logic, the
Ah,
strategy.
tell me how you did that. What's the logic for this? This is going to be really great for people to hear the logic. How do you do it?
Okay, I first think about what would be the logic to deny my request for approval. And then I thought about maybe there would be three things. So number one, so the company may be afraid of me, breaching confidentiality obligation. And number two, the conflict of interests. If the industry is a similar industry, maybe my engagement with the external companies could help our competitors. And number three, if we have two jobs, the company is worrying about we are losing focus on our main job. So maybe three things they can deny my request for approval. So I prepared for the logic that company cannot refute. So number one, for confidentiality of obligation. So I'm a member of the bar under Japanese Bengoshi Ho. So I have a confidentiality obligation, and if I breach my obligation, I will be punished by the bar association. So just trust me, I won't breach any confidentiality obligation. So that's number one. And number two, a conflict of interest. I picked up the industry which has nothing to do pharmaceutical industry. So the company is aircraft parts manufacturing company, so totally different industry from pharmaceutical industry, so no conflict of interests. And number three, I just calculated the time I needed to spend for this external board membership, and then I thought it wouldn't be a significant time required for this job. And then, I'm often attending the late night calls, so maybe giving up a few hours in a month for this external job wouldn't be so bad. So these are the kind of the logic I prepared. But luckily enough, I didn't have any hard negotiation. So I went to my supervisor, who is based in Europe, and I talked my general manager, the president of Japanese operation, and I went to a global compliance officer, and eventually I got approval.
Wow, that was amazing. What a fantastic approach to do it so logically and work out the response that you might get and work out what you can say in advance. That was just amazing, Muddy, what you just told us. Really great.
Yeah, thank you. I think my recommendation is just check with the company procedure and then just stick to the company procedure.
Yeah.
So there are some cases where, people just went ahead and then had a side job without company's approval required under the procedure, and then this person would be in huge trouble.
Yeah, it's very important, obviously, to check the internal policies and procedures. And I know in Japan these days, it's getting a little bit easier to have a side job as well as your current job. But I just really think the logic that you've presented has been amazing and very useful for anyone who's thinking about how they can do that within their companies as well. Is there anything else you'd like to say on this topic?
So I just want to say that this was a really great opportunity. So I learned a lot about the different industry, and I think I could contribute to both companies based on my experience from the other company. So I think this is a sort of a win-win-win situation. It's good for myself and it's good for GSK, and it's good for Showa, the aircraft parts company. And maybe another win if I can be a role model for young in-house lawyers.
Right, so it's win, 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 Maddie.
I hope so. It may be four wins.
Oh, wins. Wow, that is really great. Really great. Okay, well, I've got a big question for you now, and that is I want you to finish this sentence for me. The most important thing I have learned from my career in law so far is.
Follow your instincts.
Yes, I think that's what you've done. Tell us a bit more.
Don't let others define your success, in other words. So when you are pursuing your career, you will see a lot of people around you, including your loved ones, showing their concerns about the career path you are going to pursue. And everyone will give you advice based on their standard of happiness, their standard of success. However, the standard of success, standard of happiness is different from person to person. So just be honest with your instincts and just follow your instincts if you got lost. And then my piece of advice is that if you are unsure about what you really want, just talk to people, talk to your friends, talk to your family. This is not about having them making decisions for you. But rather, through that talking process, you will realize your real feelings. Your instincts will come up while talking to other people.
That's gold. That is really gold. So good to hear that. Thank you. So, Mari, there are so many things that you've been doing really well over these last few years, even despite this pandemic going on. In 2021, you won the ALB Japan Law Award as Women Lawyer of the Year in-house, and you won that again this year in 2023. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. And then same to you, Kathleen, for the award you've got from ALB this year.
Thank you. Again, in 2023, you not only won Women Lawyer of the Year in-house, you also won In-House Lawyer of the Year, the big category.
Oh yes, thank you. Yeah, I was really not expecting that, so I'm quite honored.
It was really an honor, and I was in the room when your name was called out, and I could see the surprise on your face because you're a table ahead of me in the front there, and I could see you go, "What, me? I won that one as well." That was really super amazing. And then recently, you've also been put on the GC Power List in Japan for one of the most influential in-house lawyers in Japan. This is great. What do you think it takes to be an award-winning lawyer? There's lawyers and there's great lawyers. To be an award winner, I think you have to be pretty great. And you might be very humble and not say, I'm great. But what is it that's the difference to win an award? Yeah, what does it take either as a skill or an insight, a soft skill, hard skill that you need to win an award?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know because I don't know the reason why I was selected still. But perhaps my day-to-day work with the concept of being a good, trusted advisor, not only the guardian, but also as a trusted business partner, may be evaluated by the judges. And maybe some extracurricular activities like my supporting employee resource group outside of my main work was probably evaluated as well. I honestly do not know.
Right. And then I think there's also other things that you can put in those applications around the outside activities you're doing. And so you're no longer on the JILA group, right? Directly.
I retired last year, 2022.
Oh, okay. But you could still include that in your application as well. Or submissions. And then I think you're also working now with METI. Is that right as well?
Not now. Sorry, 2018 and 2019.
I see.
I was invited as a member of the study group of METI. And because of that, sometimes I was asked to speak about the concept of, stronger the legal department. So I sometimes took the opportunity to speak, in front of other lawyers. So that was probably one of the things that the judges might evaluate.
I think so, right? So this is the METI, Ministry for Economy, Trade and Industry Study Group for the development of ideal approaches to a legal function in a Japanese company to enhance international competitiveness. What a long name for a group.
I know.
I have no idea what that is in Japanese. But yes, so that would have helped through to the award in 2021, I imagine. This is great. Why do you love doing these volunteer activities outside of your work? Do you recommend for other lawyers to do these kinds of activities?
In why I engage in this volunteer activity, because I really feel that this is something I can contribute to the society as a lawyer who became an in-house at the early stage. So back in 2007, I became the in-house lawyer at Bayer. At the time, the number of, Bengoshi in-house lawyers in Japan was only less than 200. And now, the number of Bengoshi in-house lawyers grown up to 3,000, close to 3,000. It's like 15 times more. So there are so many young in-house lawyers who needs advice from the senior in-house lawyers. So I think it would be important for the more experienced in-house counsels should share their experience, thoughts, and learnings to the younger generation. So that's what I am really passionate about. And I would definitely recommend the young lawyers to engage in this type of volunteer activity so you can contribute to the members of the society. And also you can get lots of learnings from them or from other members or from doing such activity.
Great. I'd agree with you. And just before we go into the final round of questions, which are more low key, I guess, any advice for young lawyers that you would like to give to them, young lawyers or people coming through with their law degrees from university, what kind of a career advice might you give them? If one is standing in front of you, what would you tell them?
Just again, the same thing. Just follow your instincts when you think about your career path. And then maybe another advice is to talk to the senior lawyers when you have some difficulties or you are in doubts about your career. I think you would agree, but the senior lawyers, they love to give advice to the younger lawyers. So my advice for the younger lawyers is that talk to the senior lawyers if you need advice. Just feel free, don't hesitate. Whomever you respect, you just approach.
Don't hesitate, right? You might think they're busy, but actually they always have time.
Exactly.
And they
The
love
senior
it.
lawyers,
They love it.
they love to make time for you.
They do. And we also, I think you might be the same when senior, when somebody junior reaches out to you and you're a senior lawyer. It's amazing that they have got the courage and taken the initiative to do that. And I think we reward them with saying, yes, we'll give you your time. So you heard it here from both Marty and I that it's definitely a really great idea to reach out to senior lawyers and just ask them that question you've been wanting to ask. It could change your life, or it could at least change something for you in the very near future. Great advice, Marty. Is there anything else that we didn't cover today that you wanted to mention, or something we did talk about that you want to re-emphasize?
No, I just wanted to thank you, Catherine, for this great opportunity and this amazing program. I'm really fascinated that you have been maintaining this program for such a long time. I listened to many episodes. Some of them are that of my friends, and every episode was just fantastic. So thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome. So, I'd really love to know what your favorite saying is in either English or Japanese, or something that keeps you going.
Yes, that's tomorrow is another day.
Oh, nice. It is, isn't it? Even like if you muck up at work, you've got another day to fix it. If you eat the bad food today, you've got another day tomorrow to start on the healthy food. It really is a good expression. Wow. And can I ask you, have you read something recently or listened to something recently that you'd like to share with others? Something that you really enjoyed and someone else who might read the book or listen to a podcast or a movie might enjoy?
Yeah, the recent book I read was Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. Do you know the book?
I have heard of it, but I haven't read it.
The book recommends that you should die, with no savings, which means that you should spend your money when you are young enough to have a lot of experiences. So, So this is a kind of the eye opener. Perhaps I should decrease my work and then spend more time in other things, in my life. So, yeah.
Well, that almost leads me to the next question, which is if you could create a new law for the modern world, what would that law be and why? If you could create a new law for this modern world we live in, what would it be and why?
Well, there are many, many things I want to fix in a society, but I would like to make LGBTQ equality law.
Why is that?
Because, so this employee resource group I am supporting at GSK is engaging in activities to raising awareness of LGBTQ rights. And during my activities, I realized that the Japanese government is very, very slow to fix the LGBTQ discrimination, so to speak, if I may say so. So I have been working on this topic together with my colleagues at GSK because grassroots activities are the only thing we could do in order to change the situation. But if I have the power and authority to enact any law, I would like to fix this situation to clearly define the equal rights of LGBTQ people as everybody else.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yes, you said it exactly. What a law to create for this modern world. Well, thank you, Marty. We have come to the end of a truly incredible discussion today. Thank you so much for coming on the Lawyer on Air podcast. It's been another great pleasure to speak with you in this way, and I think you've been very brave. It's really hard when you've been a first-time podcast guest to come on and do it. I really think you'll be an inspiration to other people to come on as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to you, Catherine. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And for listeners who are interested in connecting and learning more from you, can they do that through LinkedIn or what's the best place to reach out to you?
LinkedIn is great.
Great. We'll put your LinkedIn link in the show notes. And if you've listened to this episode and you're inspired in some way, to my listeners, please subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, your biggest takeaway. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast player is. Leave us a review. Also, share this episode with someone else that you think would really enjoy listening and be inspired to lead a lawyer extraordinaire life. That's all for today. Thank you. We'll see you on the next episode. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kanpai, and bye for now.